Does anyone have any specific questions? I know that it wasn't a real specific answer. Unfortunately, we're in the middle of making policy as we go to fit the needs of the current situation in the state.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Al Sylvester. I do have questions for Oak Hill. So what I'm hearing from your presentation is that Oak Hill appears to have adopted a strategy of sitting on its hands, waiting for something to happen and keeping people safe, which strikes me as not a very proactive approach. We still have no idea how much longer we're going to be in this pandemic. The rollout of a vaccine is hardly a panacea until the general population is more widely vaccinated. That could be several months hence. In the meantime, we have people sitting in their group homes who have had no social interaction for several months, and based on what I'm hearing now, have no prospects for social interaction other than the occasional outing, which is doesn't appear to be on any sort of schedule. So I find the presentation unsatisfactory, and I think we need to hear from somebody in a position of greater responsibility who actually does do some planning, because I don't hear that there's any planning going on.
So I'm glad that you said that, and I appreciate your question. We've actually had a group put together called Virtually Virtual, so that we have been able to increase our virtual services. Over the past several months, we have been offering virtual services through our adaptive sports and fitness program through Oak Hill Centers, that all of the individuals have the opportunity to participate in at the group homes. They provide fitness services, group fitness classes. One of the program managers has been doing twice weekly virtual yoga classes. Another of our program managers has been having a virtual concert. We have a virtual concert series. We have a program manager who is a singer-songwriter, and she performs weekly, takes requests, involves the individuals. If people would like to perform, we have several people that do perform from their group homes, because they can participate via Zoom or Teams, whatever platform we're using. And we recently put together, in the spirit of being proactive, since we realized that while the vaccine, you know, is a good thing, it's not going to end the precautions altogether. So we did put together a task force called Virtually Virtual to increase the accessibility of virtual services, increase the number of services that are going to be available to people living in the group homes. And I anticipate that we would be able to use some of this funding for that, because we will need the enhanced staffing to assist with that, if that would be allowable. So those are the virtual services that we have provided and are trying to expand. And as for being proactive, in the planning, I completely understand how you are viewing our approach. We were very early on to take precautions, and I understand that they seem very restrictive. We have to ensure the safety first and foremost. We absolutely will make individualized plans for specific people, and have been doing that throughout this entire process. If we can make something happen for somebody, I developed a protocol specifically for an individual to have an in-person visit with a family member when they lived in a medically compromised home. We employed the use of what we called a hug device. I don't know if you guys have seen any of those on the internet. People were using them to in nursing homes and things so that people could hug their loved ones in a safe way. So we have been actively trying to plan to include people in the community. Unfortunately, we have seen the effects of the virus within our agency, and the number one responsibility that we always have is to keep people safe. So if people have any suggestions, other things that I may have not thought of or that we as an agency haven't thought of, but we've been working together with our partners, our other departments, Oak Hill Centers, the Education, Oak Hill School, to try to keep people as engaged as we possibly can through the pandemic.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Al Sylvester. I want to thank you for your straightforward response. You have addressed my specific objections. The only other question I have is, have you taken a survey or otherwise been able to ascertain how the clients respond to these virtual services that you provide?
We haven't done a formal survey. However, we do track data in our electronic healthcare record. And so we are able to determine, how often people participate, whether they participate, one time sporadically or if they're consistent participants. And we have seen that when an individual engages in one activity, that they generally will continue to engage in that. They might try another one out. but we haven't sent out maybe like a satisfaction survey, if that's what you're asking specifically about, but it's something that I can certainly bring up. I think it's a good idea.
This is Al Sylvester. I just want to say thank you for that. And I was hoping that you might have some specific notion about any clients that you've been in contact with and how they've responded to it. Doesn't necessarily have to be a formal survey, although I do think a survey is a good idea. But your own observations, have you seen that they've been responsive and that they find this something that's engaging to them and that they feel a little less isolated as a result of it?
Yes, the Thursday night concert series specifically, I log into it every Thursday, and I've been a part of the family meetings that we hold every other Friday for families and guardians to ask questions. It's kind of like a town hall style event. And so I log in every Thursday, and I see, multiple group homes logging in, and the beautiful part is that their families are invited as well, so you see the connections of people who haven't been able to be physically in person with their loved one, be able to engage with them on the screen, and they really seem to enjoy it. When we had our last parent and family meeting last Friday, there were three or four people who specifically mentioned the concert series and being able to feel like a sense of family, even though they aren't physically together. So that specifically, I think it's like an after work thing, it's at 6 o'clock, and everybody joins in, everybody sings along. She sings songs that everybody knows from all different eras and all different genres. The individuals absolutely love it. The families love it. They banter back and forth, and it's been a really, really wonderful thing that she's been doing that since I think April or May. So every Thursday night, with the exception of I think Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve.
Hi, this is Kathy Ward for Kamala. Is it possible to just pause for a quick switch? Thank you.
I have a
I have a question to Titana Tyler, Chair. What type, this is for you, Belize, do you have any other programs, non-virtual, where the client may be able to go out into fresh air and be able to meet with family members? The other thing I want to mention is, I know several family members in my family, they get a rapid test, and within a couple of hours, they get a response that if they're negative, then they can use that form to show that they can come in, take their clients out. I mean, is that allowable? I mean, other than being secluded indoors, are there any outside? I know I have a brother in a convalescent home, and I would bundle him up and would go outside walking. I'm just curious if there are any other non-virtual interaction support.
I mean, we don't have any structured, obviously, group in-person activities, but as for, you know, regular community outings, for staff, we have protocols, like I said, about where they can go depending on how many people are there. We were restricting the staff not to take them to stores or into restaurants once that became able to go there. We're still not going inside any of those places, but people have always been able to go outside. We've always allowed socially distanced visits with family. Because we do require it to be socially distanced. We generally have it at the group home so that the staff can monitor to ensure that social distance is maintained. Like I said, we have guidelines in place for family visits. If people want to take their loved one home, there is a way to do it, but there are pretty specific guidelines about testing and so forth. But it is something that is able to happen in certain cases, depending on the risk assessment we did with DDS and DPH. People have done it. People have gone home for a couple of weeks. When we're doing visits, we can do them at parks if the family wants to meet us at a park instead of at the group home. But we don't, at this point, we don't have any contact visits unless you're taking the individual home for the 7-day or longer period.
Hi, this is Kathy Morgan.
Hi.
I would like to comment on that as a guardian of three adults who are in CIB, Oak Hill Group Homes, two who were under the Deafblind grant. I've really appreciated receiving the notices of the musical opportunities that I could tune into. I have one group home with two of these individuals, again under the grant, where their work projects, earning money, has been brought into the group home, and they have daily routines to complete these work projects, and they are then paid for these work projects, and then they're delivered for those who are homeless. I've been able to visit the group homes, masked, stand outside, and wave and have a conversation from afar with the individual people who I am guardian of. Mm-hmm. I very appreciated the contact made by both the group home manager and the virtual events that are held for these clients. My men do get outside.
They do take walks. So under the circumstances, I am impressed by what has gone on. Both group homes have had the worries about the COVID-19. The group homes have managed through these with staffing and testing, and I'm impressed by what Oak Hill has done for the clients. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Barbara Cronin. I'd like to comment also on that. As a parent of my son Peter, who's in an Oak Hill group home, we have had visits with him outside. He also had his birthday, so we all went up there and had a visit for his birthday. And before Christmas, we took him his presents also. And then one other day when it was a little warmer than those 2 days, we did have more of a visit. And I think Oak Hill has been very, very good about allowing these kinds of interactions. And we almost always participate in the every other Friday update parent meetings, which we find very informative. So even though it's not nice that you don't have that much contact, at least we feel that Peter is being well taken care of and he seems happy, and you know, that's the most important thing. So I too feel that they have done a good job during this time.
Thank you. Well, this is Hannah Tyler, Chair. Thank you. Those are wonderful comments, and that's good that it's going well. May we continue now to report from Beth Peter?
Lisa, Hannah?
Madam Chair, Lisa Flaherty Vaughn has her hand up, and then we still need to have Sue Patterson's report.
Okay, go ahead.
Adrian Vaughn speaking. Thank you. I'm deafblind, so I'm speaking through an interpreter. And thank you so much for all your information. I mean, everything looks really good and really seems really good. I just have one question, if you don't mind. I mean, it's great that the program's running and doing really great. I'm not so very much aware of Oak Hill, so it's hard for me to get like a schema of what, you know, like for deafblind consumers, you know, with COVID and I'm just kind of thinking like, well, how is the access to communication being able to go? I mean, it might be fine, like what you're saying, everything, that's all great, but just specifically to those needs of those consumers, like, do you have interpreters coming in? Because it's maybe, you know, tactile, they might have to be touching with different people or their staff. How is communication going in these group homes for, you know, again, for communication access for people that are deafblind? If you don't mind, if you just expand on that, I'm just thinking for the community. And then as just the follow-up, just how many deafblind people, the individuals, do you have in your program? And, I mean, do they have varied access and communication needs? But thank you so much. If you can answer those, that'd be great.
Oh, of course. We currently don't have any people coming into the group homes that are not Oak Hill people or emergency personnel or things like that. If people need assistance, they have the staff for communication. We also have the New England Assistive Technology, the NATE Center, that has been really helpful partnering with us for communication needs if they arise. I know that the staff that work with our deafblind individuals have been doing so for quite a long time, so I haven't been made aware personally of any individual issues with communication. I can look into that after the meeting. I've asked how everybody in preparation for this meeting, you know, I did ask how things were going in the specific homes. Things seem to be going well. I didn't hear of any specific communication barriers, but I will definitely ask that specific question. And I want to say we have 32 under this grant. I'm not sure of the exact number of people who have you know, any at all hearing or vision impairments. So I can ask, there's a report I can run in our electronic healthcare record to find that specific number as well. But we do, I just connected somebody the other day with the NEAT Center and our Oak Hill centers about assistive technology for an individual in one of our, not our group homes, it's called a community companion home, where people live with a person out in the community. So I just connected somebody with NEAT for that. We got an assistive technology grant, so we're getting some communication devices for all of our community companion homes.
This is Kathy Morgan. Just a comment regarding to the individuals who I am guardian of. They are a group home fully staffed by people who know sign language, use both tactile sign language and ASL within the group home. So the group home, so to answer your question, Lisa, for the group home that my men are in, they receive tactile communication and signed in the air.
Yeah, when we hire staff that work in homes with people that have the need for sign language, tactile or otherwise, we identify that through the hiring process. So the staff that need to learn, whether it's ASL or tactile sign language, we identify that right in the hiring process, and we offer the opportunity for them to learn that prior to working in those homes.
Lisa has another question. Just a real short and sweet question. Again, this is Lisa speaking, and thank you so much for your response. Again, this is a very, very short, quick one. I do like to encourage, I mean, of course, all staff to, you know, because deafblind people are varied, and you don't know about what their need. Just so, again, to give, you know, kind of that, you know, have that inclusion and that self-esteem, and just kind of bring them up and, like, you know, be, you know, let them be expressive, let them be part of the conversation, and really have that be a part of them. You know, it's like that kind of, all right, well, how are you going to just to tell them something, but just have it so open is just the best approach. So that was my last little word of advice.
Okay, this is Hannah Tyler. I believe we have no more comments or questions. So can we move along to our next Brian?
Yes, this is Brian, Madam Chair. Yes, at this point, thank you. I will ask Sue Pedersen from Communication Advocacy Network to give us an update and to discuss what CAN is thinking in terms of future service delivery. Sue? Mm.
Hi everyone, yes, this is Sue speaking, Sue Pedersen, and I'm from Communication Access Network. It's interesting to hear the presentation from Oak Hill and the programs and the activities going on there. Very, very different from our program. We're doing a lot of service, and a lot of our clients are using ASL to communicate. Some may have Usher syndrome, some may have or tactile, some may have close vision, some might actually need to be far to see the communication. which can be about 12. So we have 12 to 15 service providers. And we often go out shopping. We go out, you know, for medical appointments. But really, that's kind of the limit of those things. So with deaf and with deafblind people, they are, you know, yes, they are very, very isolated from the community and from the community activities at this point, you know, and what's going out there, obviously, in the times that we're in now, and we all understand those times with safety and the coronavirus. But it's really not easy for a deafblind person to really get out in the world how it is today with any sort of confidence. I mean, there's quite a lot of fear about getting sick and then going to the hospital and what that then would entail. You know, many hospitals, you know, there's quite strict rules right now for any sort of second person or, you know, as an interpreter or any, you know, auxiliary person, you know, with, again, these times of coronavirus and with safety. So really, that's a very big issue for us, and it's something that we've had to face continuously. You know, so blind people that are living on their own or living with their families, it's, you know, we're seeing them, there's a huge reduction of hours on how much we're seeing them and how much they can be out in the community. But it is so essential for these services, for example, and even, again, to go shopping or the medical appointments, as I had mentioned, you know, those are only the essentials we do go out for. With the safety rules and protocols with coronavirus, they have to obviously be enforced and be followed. I believe there were 3 deafblind individuals that went to the Deaf Wellness and Recreation Center, DWRC. This is located in Wallingford. And that is a program that is, it's like a deaf day or deaf, you know, adult program. And we do have SSPs, support service providers, and we're, you know, utilizing them a lot. You know, for example, even if a deafblind person is sitting and the SSP is sitting behind them, you know, and can tell them, you know, things that are happening in the environment. We did have one deafblind person that did have coronavirus, was positive for coronavirus, so they did not have any interaction, and we couldn't work with them for over a month. So it's over a month now. We just had that one individual. And even the doctor was saying there was such a, you know, a small percentage of deaf and deafblind people, this doctor has noticed, have been testing positive for coronavirus, you know. But the reason is that they don't talk. They have the, you know, you have your mask on and they're not talking. They're using sign language. So there's no, that transference is a lot more difficult. So, yeah, I mean, it's, but again, if you're having your mask and you're talking, or if the mask, you know, and there's the, you know, germs can be out and spread, it's, you know, that's something that happens out in the community, but our community not as much, which is a lucky thing. But, so again, for letting, like for example, Jesse and Lisa, I mean, it would be also interesting to hear about their personal experiences being out in the community in these times of the coronavirus. But first, does anybody have any questions for me before, you know, I can see if Jesse maybe or Lisa has anything they would like to add? Seems like Lisa has her hand raised. Hi, this is Lisa speaking. Thank you for what you mentioned about what's been going on, and yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, me, myself being a deafblind person, I am home a lot. You know, it's important for me to be safe. I do not want to go to the hospital with communication access and all the rules and protocols and you know, it's, you know, it, I can't, I mean, I'm the president of another organization and I can't be involved. I mean, everybody needs to stay home. It is very isolating, but I mean, what I am doing personally, you know, I mean, again, we're working with Zoom a lot. It's, you know, it's keeping in touch with people as much as I can, you know, again, and making sure I can see them and making sure I can access people. But you have to understand, so many people are, you know, deaf blind people are out there, there's no kind of one way. Like, everybody has different needs and different, you know, what they prefer and their technology and their equipment, what they have in their homes. So really, yes, everything kind of on hold with COVID-19. With people that are, you know, it's, you know, you're working with an interpreter sometimes if they have to call, you know, or you need a communication facilitator, you know, but then sometimes if they're with their families, you know, their families don't want this strange person there. Other families are okay and understand the need for a communication facilitator, so that person, deaf blind person, can access phone calls and Zoom calls. But again, having access to, you know, meetings every 2 weeks, I mean, Jesse can explain a little bit more about any sort of specifics. But again, there's positive and negative with any situation, but everybody is so varied. There's no one size fit all. And no one has, you know, technology is great, but Zoom is not perfect, you know, and then again, like I said, you can do, maybe some people can do Zoom on their own, other need a communication facilitator. You know, I mean, yeah, we're all waiting for this whole thing to be gone so we can get back to normal life, but thank you. So I just wanted to add that. And I guess Jesse, you can go next. Hi, everyone. This is Jesse speaking. And also, just kind of adding on to what Lisa was saying, I absolutely agree. I mean, I use Zoom so much these days, you know, since coronavirus started, so much. Especially at work, and being a deafblind person, you know, it's very, very tough to, you know, have in-person meetings or have, you know, in-person discussions, you know, because you're supposed to, people want to have that 6 feet kind of barrier, but I need to be closer, you know, so I'm doing a lot online. I've been working at the American School for the Deaf for, since this whole thing started, since March. So I've learned quite a lot about Zoom, and about, you know, the access for deaf people, for deafblind people. You know, there has been improvements in regards to accessibility. Problems are really that, you know, deafblind people don't, you know, really have that training on how to use Zoom, you know, or don't have even, like, what the equipment to even get in the door with Zoom. Back in March when this pandemic kind of hit us, so many deafblind people were just immediately disconnected from the world. And it was such a struggle, and, you know, where everybody was and what was happening and what was going on. And I did set up a temporary, like a deafblind kind of group, like a support group, for support. It's a DBSAM, Deafblind Support Advocacy Group, or meeting, rather. So we have meetings on Zoom, and we would talk about, okay, how is COVID-19, you know, affecting the community? How is it impacting us? And really, we would kind of all just throw out different ideas and how we can kind of approach and, you know, with different solutions. Several times we had presenters that would talk about different kind of, you know, different viewpoints. Maybe like a communication facilitator would speak, or you know, someone would speak about, you know, safety and with the police department, or what was going on with Black Lives Matter movement, just to keep everybody, again, just, I mean, so many people, you have to understand, all over the United States wound up joining these meetings. And again, deafblindness runs the gamut. And what Lisa was saying about, you know, some needed captioning or transcription services, some needed communication facilitators, some could visually access the screen, but we had to make accommodations there for each person. This past fall, there were, you know, again, were changes in the meeting that, you know, again, we're having them every 2 weeks, but they're still running and they're still successful. And we're kind of, you know, we're starting to set up kind of like that it's DBSAN, so it would be Deafblind Support Advocacy Network, and this is in the process of being set up. But again, getting these different, you know, practices and things about with deafblindness and education, and again, just, and really just the social interaction is so important as well. you know, we have so many ideas, and we really, this is, would be fully run with community involvement, and we're working on this right now, getting that up and running. So I guess I can go to the next person now. And we can switch interpreters now, please.
Madam Chair, this is Brian. Just in the interest of time, the time check, it's 11:44. The meeting goes till 12:30, so we've got approximately 45 minutes left. So I'm going to recommend that we move on to the next agenda item, unless there's a remaining question for Sue Patterson.
Brian, this is Pat Clark speaking. I just wanted to make a correction. I believe that our schedule is that our interpreters are scheduled until 12:15. So if you need the meeting to go until 12:30, I'm just checking my schedule in my system right now, but I thought for sure that it was scheduled to 12:15. Yes, so I have the interpreter scheduled to 12:15.
This is Brian. That's interesting because the publicly noticed agenda says right on at 10 to 12:30.
I'm not sure why that happened. I'm not sure if the request came in to 12:15, but we can certainly ask the interpreters if they can extend.
This is Michael Akimsa, interpreter coordinator with ADS. I would just like to check in with the captioner as well. It's possible for the capture either to verbally say how long you are scheduled until or put it in the captioning chat or in the meeting chat.
Madam Chair, this is Pam Crawford. I'm monitoring the chat. Tara Brown Ogilvie has said that in her calendar it's from 10 to 12, just to get some clarification on the time. Also, Pam says that she can stay till 12:30 if needed.
Okay, very good.
Until 12:30 as well.
May we proceed, Brian? I know time is in essence right now. From our director.
Well, can I
thank you? There is a new agenda item. Is the one that was voted in, which is the recommendations of the surgery team that met. So I'm going to ask Christopher Lassen to provide that report and recognize that if the committee is in favor of this, a vote would be required. Also recognizing that if we don't get an affirmation, that we have the ability to continue to 12:30 with the interpreters, we would sadly need to make a motion to adjourn when we lose the ability to provide this meeting in an accessible format. So I ask everybody to keep those variables in mind. Thank you. Chris?
Sure. Thanks, Brian. Can you hear me, by the way, Brian? Yes. Okay. Great. And by the way, just... I don't know if it's possible to be on video, but it says the host has stopped access to video, so I don't know what that's about. Not that I terribly care, but... So I did want to report on the work of the client service plan review team, which had requests from two current clients come before it, and also there were three new BESBE clients added to the registry who are persons with deaf blindness. I do want to explain that became clear only last week for two of those persons, and so I guess one of the things I wanted to request is that the report of the client service plan review team be added to each agenda. If it is possible, we would certainly meet earlier than the Friday preceding a Tuesday meeting, but unfortunately that was not possible in this particular case. So I thank everyone for adding us to the agenda. And I just wanted to need to access another screen here. So, but I did want to report that, let's see, so we had a request for a longtime client of the agency, DH, for a community inclusion grant at the last meeting. That request was approved, and the contracting process is now rolling out. So we would have, hopefully at the next meeting, another client with an individual, a vendor, to report on the progress of. For that client, we also received a request, client's DDS caseworker, for help in providing them with a communications device. And so Margie Santos, who is the BESB social worker who is providing case management for DH, is working to determine the client's present signed communication skills with the loss of additional vision before being able to assess best strategies for intervention and communication. At that point, we will be able to advise both DDS and Access Through Technology whether there is a suitable communication device to provide to that client. We had another request from a longtime client receiving services through CAN, and this individual expressed an interest in increasing or learning Braille and increasing fluency in tactile sign. So we are pursuing a possible referral for a contractor, MC, who provides Braille instruction for many of the clients currently receiving that, to see whether MC can add additional instructional time to her schedule to assist this client, TM. And we will be looking for options for the client to become more conversant, perhaps through some assistance from CAN in learning tactile sign, hopefully in social settings at least. A third client, and this is the first of three new clients who were added to the BESB roles in the past 3 months, has moved to Connecticut, is a longtime person with deafblindness, has received services through HKNC in New York, and has recently relocated to Connecticut and is looking for some services, SSP services from CAN. And in that case, having reviewed the client's request, the client service plan review team is recommending that this new client, initials MG, be added to the CAN contract. We're also working with the client who brought some components of an environmental notification system when they moved from New York City in December. We're working to facilitate an assessment of the new residents and use or replace any of those environmental notification system components as necessary. We'll also be pursuing a referral to the Access Through Technology program as the client came with a lot of tech equipment but hasn't finished syncing it all together with a new smartphone that they received in New York State. They're also looking to resume Braille instruction, and we're seeing if one of our current contractors could add MG to the caseload. And Margie has just completed the intake interview for that client into the BESBE Adult Services program. And so the client's being referred for additional services. Somewhat unusually, we also, just in the last week, added two clients heretofore unknown to BESBE, a 20-year-old client who moved into an apartment in North Central Connecticut after receiving services from the Willie Ross School for the Deaf in Longmeadow, Massachusetts, I believe, and leaving that school when the client turned 18. This client is only 20, so our understanding is that the client is not eligible to be included in SSP services until the age of 21. And so we are reaching out to both the Children's Services Ed Consultants and Karen Olson of the New England Consortium on Deafblindness to see if there's a way to provide some services before the client turns 21 in this coming October. And the client is, conversant in ASL, but does have some, needs for assistance. We've also identified a new 29-year-old client in Greater Danbury who had never received BESBE services as a child, but has experienced considerable hearing and vision loss as a young adult, now is totally deaf, profoundly deaf, is looking to develop a communication modality, hopefully, to include tactile sign down the road. And so we will be the intake, because the client was just added to the BESBE roles last week, is not yet complete, and so we can't recommend that this client be added to the CAN contract at present, but we are going to be looking for some supports to assist all three of these newly added clients in adjusting and adapting to their communication needs in Connecticut. So that's kind of the work of the client service plan review team. Again, I do apologize that we were not able to provide this much in advance of the meeting, but unfortunately we don't control when the referrals come in from eye doctors, and we just learned of two of these clients last week. So I don't know the extent to which anyone has questions about the work of the client service plan review team. But again, the only issue for action today is to add this veteran client who has long received services in other states, who is 68 years old, conversant in ASL and tactile sign, and we are recommending that this person be added as the 24th client on the CAN contract.
Madam Chair? Madam Chair, this is Al Sylvester. I'd like to move that we accept the recommendation of the CSPRT and further request that its summary be incorporated to the minutes by reference and made available an accessible format. We'd need a second to proceed.
Okay.
I second the motion.
Okay, thank you, Shandy. And now, is anyone opposed? Please state now.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Suggest we have a discussion before we move to a vote?
Sure. I apologize. Absolutely. Any comments, suggestions, discussions?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Given the importance of this request, I request that we hold a roll call vote so people are on the record.
Sure. All right.
Thank
Brian,
you.
Can you do a roll call, please?
I'm unmuting and trying to activate my camera. It's hidden below my toolbar. Okay. Sorry about that. The toolbar was blocking access to my camera. Okay, I shall do a roll call vote of voting members. And at this point, I am going to also include our two new voting members. So the motion you're voting on is to add one new client to the CAN contract, to the existing CAN contract. Elise Arsenault. Remember, you need to unmute in order to vote. Not here. Elise, are you there? Tara Brown Ogilvie.
Approve, and I think Elise's line is muted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is. Elise, can you unmute? I guess not. Barbara Kloon?
Yes, in favor.
Lisa Flaherty Vaughn?
In favor.
Eric Pringle?
Brian, this is Pam Crawford, BRS staff interpreter. I just wanted to let you know that Eric has left the meeting. He had to leave for another commitment, and that he was sorry to leave last minute.
Okay. So thank you for that.
Yes.
So now, just to summarize, I don't know if Elise is able to unmute. I've got Tara has voted yes, Barbara has voted yes, Lisa Flaherty Vaughn has voted yes, Eric Kringle is not here, Karen Olson on behalf of Tracy Lucelli.
Yes, I'm in support.
Sandra Miles.
Yes, I'm in support.
Kathy Morgan.
Yes, I'm in support.
Six. Wayne Seidel?
Yes.
That's seven. Jesse Stanley?
Yes, I support.
That's eight. Al Sylvester?
Al Sylvester in favor.
That's nine. Hannah Tyler?
Yes, I support.
Okay, that is 10 voting members in support. Your motion has carried. There are no abstentions. There are no nay votes. So it carried 9-0.
Okay.
Could we pause a moment for our interpreter switch, please?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving along, Brian, for the next, do you have anything you want to report?
Yes, I do have some brief updates.
Okay.
Earlier meeting, I had reported that our adult services staff had been working on some how-to videos, like how to pour a cup of liquid, hot liquid, how to do simple sewing repairs with, for instance, using a self-threading needle, how to fill out a check. Those videos have been completed. They are now, just as of yesterday, posted on the Aging and Disability Services YouTube channel, and I will be sending out a link in the fairly near future for everybody. Second, I also want to say that the State Rehabilitation Council and the Advisory Board both approved changes to the vocational rehabilitation policies on personal adjustment training. These had gone out to public hearing prior to being voted on. They were approved and will become effective on February 1st. So I will be sending out that announcement with a link to the updated policy manual. I also want to just mention that the most recent stimulus relief act that was passed does include funding for vending facility managers across the country whose jobs have been impacted by the coronavirus to receive funding to help offset their business losses. This is wonderful news. Here in Connecticut, all but four of our business enterprise locations are still closed. The only ones that are open presently are three micromarts, which are pretty much a self-serve type of location, and one exclusive vending machine location. The other facilities, the operators have not had income from these businesses since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, and probably not going to be able to consider reopening any of these locations until building populations resume at levels that would support operating a food service business. So that was certainly welcome news. The State Rehabilitation Council has three new members that were appointed by the governor, Philip McGalnick and Dennis Reagan, both filled category of recipient of services, and Jennifer Jenkins fills the category of client assistance program. And then finally, at the national level, with the change in president, there's certainly the change in administration. So Mark Schultz is no longer the Commissioner of Rehabilitation Services Administration. Betsy DeVos is no longer the Secretary of Education. Phil Rosenfeld, the Deputy General Counsel for Program Services, is currently serving as the Acting Secretary of Education, pending the confirmation of Miguel Ardana. And that, Madam Chair, is my report.
Thank you, Brian. And now, comments from me. What I can say is, first, thank you. I've got my giant calendar, which is awesome. I do want to mention, you said you had some videos on how to do certain things. The school for the deaf, Hadley School for the Blind has several things online that will show you how to do certain things, common everyday steps, which is fabulous. You can check into that. And I have just one question. In the last announcement, Ms. Olson mentioned New England Consortium on Deaf Blind is was planning a virtual summit on January 15th. We just passed. I wondered how that went. Anybody have a comment?
Yes, Hannah, this is Karen Olson.
Right.
I was just in the process of sending the invitation to Lisa Tangway to further send on to members of this committee. It didn't start on the 15th. It's starting this Friday.
Oh, okay.
So it runs 4 consecutive Fridays, starting this Friday, the 29th. The first Friday covers hearing loss, all aspects of hearing loss. The second Friday is on visual impairments. The third Friday is specific to what we consider a deafblind, I wouldn't call it a syndrome, but cytomegalovirus, CMV. It's a CMV Awareness Day. And then the final Friday, which I believe is February 12th, is on communication. It's free. When I send this to Lisa, and if she can send it out, originally it came from Tracy Evans-Lewiselli from the consortium. I think the one I'm sending out had been already forwarded from Tara's office. So if people just scroll down, there are links to look at the agenda and then further sign up, register through the grant. You can register for each day separately.
Uh-huh.
So I'll send that out in about 2 seconds. And if there are any questions, I'll take any questions people may have.
Well, thank you, Karen. That's great. I didn't miss anything then. Anyone have announcements to make?
Madam Chair?
Yes?
This is Al Sylvester.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want it to go unmentioned that the President's nominee for Secretary of Education is Connecticut's own Miguel Cardona. Not only is he from Connecticut, Meriden to be specific, but he also grew up in public housing, so he has the perspective of somebody who participates in public benefits, and I think that will serve him well going forward, and that will give him a sense of connection with our community.
That's great. That's great to hear. Anyone else have any announcement? Thank you. Okay, well, great. May we have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
Move adjournment. This is Al.
And second?
Sandy Miles, second.
Well, thank you. Motion is passed. I thank you all and the interpreters for keeping up with us.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you all. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
The interpreters would stay on the meeting. Everyone has left. That would be great. Camilla, if you could sign, if Heidi could stay. Oh, it looks like she's... Oh, she's over.